Hello and welcome to Season 3 of the Push Podcast. My name is Jack Ferguson, an experienced marketing and sales consultant with a science background, and I'm your host. This season of the podcast is essential listening for small and medium-sized companies looking for their next stage of growth. Myself and other experts will explore common problems in marketing, product, and sales. We will deconstruct them and then detail straightforward, evidence-based remedies for you. I aim to give you both inspiration and practical solutions to push through similar challenges in your own company. Thanks for being here, and don't forget to subscribe on whatever platform you're listening on. Hello and welcome to this episode of the Push Podcast. This episode is all about product management, in particular for early stage startups. We're going to look at some intricacies of the product management role at this company size, and we'll break down common product issues. Who should listen to this episode? Well, if you're a founder of a startup, if you're a product manager yourself, or if you're an employee of a startup, this episode will be perfect for you. Why? It will give you a chance to better understand what a product manager should and shouldn't be doing, and in particular, how they should be interacting with customers if they should at all. This scenario is explored through AI consulting startup Writer, who have four employees and a CEO, Jordan Lee. Employees are a salesperson, a marketer, an AI expert who is also the product manager, and a developer. Currently, they have 10 free users on the platform and no paid customers. The product manager doesn't want to talk to customers, so what should CEO Jordan do? Some of the specifics that this episode will cover include what makes an ideal product manager at this size of company, what's an activation point and why are they important, what's a lane stayer and why they shouldn't work in startups? What's a situation where a product manager would be justified in not talking to customers? Why product managers can't just look at behavioral data? If a product manager is needed at this size of company at all? And who in the team should be talking to customers? To talk this through, I'm joined again by growth and product marketing specialist Alex Urquhart. If you'd like to find myself or Alex online, you can find the links to our social media pages and websites in this episode's description, whatever platform you are listening on. But for now, let's bring in Alex. Alex, welcome back to another episode of the Push Podcast. It's good to have you here.
Thanks very much, mate. Good to be here.
Good to talk again. I'm excited to deal with the challenges in today's episode. And as you know, Writer, the company you've been helping for quite some time now, has a PM, a project manager, who's refusing to speak to customers, which is pretty rude, if you ask me. They say it's beneath them, and that is for salespeople to do. The project manager says they need to focus on the next sprint and roadmap, and the salespeople are becoming resentful. Jordan, the CEO, is confused and not sure what to do here. What should he do?
Good question, mate. Well, I think I'm going to make some enemies regardless of which direction I go on this one. But I think the short answer is no one really likes doing that. You know, in the best of times, like 9 times out of 10, when you speak to a customer, they're not going to be happy. So like it's usually you're pitching something or it's uncomfortable, or for Jordan's sake, you've got 10, you've got 10 free clients. So you've got investors breathing down their neck. So I think there's probably two parts to this. If it's just talking to existing users, I would go against the PMs here and just go, no, you should be talking to them. It doesn't take much effort. They already know who you are. You're not cold calling people. It's not that uncomfortable. Because at the end of the day, the PMs and frankly, the whole company, you've got a company of four people, right? Like, so you need, everyone needs to be across the market. Like they should know the market and the persona and the people, like the back of their hand. They need to know everything about them. Because as in the first stage, everything is just data. And I think we spoke about this last episode. Everything is, you just need to validate and validate, validate, validate. So whatever your assumptions are that you think you can use this AI product to create proposals for these like law firms, you know, it sounds good in theory, everything sounds good in theory, but trying to validate that. So having the PMs who are building the product, you know, I'd argue they're probably the people that need to know them the most. So what are the hates? What are the needs? What are the little idiosyncrasies that's going to trip them up and make them go crazy? I know a lot of times it is the other way because PMs tend to be creative or design, or you know, they want to focus on the product, hence their role. You know, they got into the industry to work on products. So the idea of anything remotely close to the market or sales, people tend to hate. Like it just seems to be people allergic to it. Again, I get it. It can be uncomfortable, but I would try to meet them halfway and say, well, you need to understand the market better. We all do. So you've either got couple of options. You know, you've got to actually go in there with the sales team, you know, if they're talking to the customers, if it's sort of new people, because I don't believe there's a customer success manager on the team yet. So imagine the developer and the product manager are taking care of existing clients. So I'd say for support or feedback, you need to be talking to them about the future roadmaps or your upcoming releases. And by roadmaps, I mean sort of what they've got planned on for the product, what features, what new additions they're going to add. Because yeah, in the beginning, it's this swirling, you know, Venn diagram of like trying to get what the market needs and what you can provide and trying to overlap the two together. So I would say short answer is yes, I need to be talking to people. I'd want more context of does Jordan expect them to go out to the market and create conversations out of nothing? That I'd probably push back on there because, yeah, I know most PMs would say, no, I'm not doing that. Like, I'm happy to talk to existing customers. I'm happy to figure out what their needs to try and get to that. Because then the second part is with the new customers, that's to me, that's the sales team, which we've got there. So those new leads coming in or the new inquiries, again, trying to give me the benefit of the doubt. I know it is tricky for people to start a conversation, particularly an inbound lead. It's very much a salesy, awkward interaction. But if that's the case, bring the salesperson in, let the salesperson lead the meeting and just be honest with them and say, I brought along our product manager here today. You know, we'll obviously see if this is the right fit. If it is or it isn't, you know, our product manager wants to hear this. So we need to understand what you guys need, what you don't need, what you love, what you hate, what your ideas are. And that's going to help influence, well, one, qualify, is this good for you now? And then if not, what can we do to make it so it is a good fit for you?
I've got a question on that. So some product managers might say, well, I look at the data all the time. I look at the behavioral metrics and what people are doing on the platform. And that's different to talking to them though. What do you say when a product manager says that to you? I look at the data all the time, mate.
Good question. Again, maybe two parts of that. One is with 10 free freemium customers, like, you talk to any data analyst or data scientist, that's not enough. That's absolute rubbish. And in the beginning, because it's so open, like, you don't know what you don't know. I would say most of the value comes from qualitative feedback. Again, it's all assumptions. You go, oh, great, they clicked here a bunch of times and, you know, they're highly active on Thursdays and all this data. It's like, well, it doesn't have any context. Like, is it good? Is it bad? Because you could find someone that's highly active and you go, oh, you must love it. And then you speak to them and they go, oh, I hate it. It's terrible. I spent all day bashing my head against the wall, but my boss makes me use it. Like,
that's a good point.
Yeah. Like, you've got to have the two together. I guess at the end of the day, they're just two of the same channels to get to the same outcome. What you want to do is understand what the customer wants, what they don't want, and what's stopping them from moving in the direction you want them to move in. So whether that's using the product more or purchasing it or whatever your activation point is. And by that, I mean activation point is typically for, say, a freemium. So a free trial you do, you go through a couple of different actions to use, say, Asana. I'm thinking of a popular one. And maybe the activation point is completing a task. So which means you've got to create a project, you've got to add some tasks to your list, you've got to add some details, and you've got to sign it off. Canva is another popular one. You know, you'd have to talk to their team, but I would imagine an activation point for free trial might be log in, click around, design something, and download or print or whatever that last action is. And the activation point being, at this point, not always, but it's probably, we can safely say they've adopted it or they've at least gotten value from the product. So whatever that activation point is, and trying to look at it and going, okay, we can look at the metrics of that data and say, as you say, like, cool, once they get to this point, they should have adopted it and used it and seen the full value of the cycle, so a higher chance they'll stay on board, a higher chance that they'll retain. But yeah, again, 10 free users is just like, you could luck out every time. And you don't even know in the beginning. It's all a hypothesis, right? You could say, if they get to this point, they see value. Well, you don't know that. Like I said, they could hate it.
Yes.
And the least active user could be your biggest advocate as well. So like, there's so much context over it. So my big approach to this stuff is, I think people need to put their ego down and be comfortable with feeling uncomfortable.
Yep.
And if you don't want to, sounds pretty rough, but my advice is don't go to a startup because you have to wear many hats. It's uncomfortable. You're going to have to step outside your comfort zone, do random things that is not part of your job description, because everyone's got to act to the best interest of the whole sort of company. I had a guy I used to work with, called them lane stayers, like people who are like, no, this is my PD, right? Like, this is what I do. I'm not doing anything else. And you go, well, that's cool if you worked for, you know, Bank of Queensland, or if you had a 10,000 troop that you had to follow that. But in the early days, like, if you don't help cover some gaps at certain periods within reason, things will fall apart. Sometimes salespeople have to do support calls. You know, sometimes support people have to sell. CEOs have to jump in demos. Like, it just, you got to do what you got to do to get things moving.
That's what it is. Yeah.
Yep.
Interesting on the qualitative data point too is one thing that was coming to mind while you were talking about that was if people are saying, well, you know, we want more than that, well, that's something you do actually have. You know, you've got to kind of take what you have and you do need to make leaps. And if we talked about sample sizes and that type of thing before it becomes scientific or before it comes to the point where you can extrapolate that across a category, you're not there yet. And you need to use this stuff. And then, yes, you need to make some judgment calls and make some leaps. Totally on board with that. In what situation would the product manager be right? When would they be justified to have this point of view, do you think, if ever?
Yeah, it is. It is a good question. I would say in the beginning, if there is, like, for example, like one comes to mind is like if they've gone out and validated. So say those 10 people, which I'd still even argue it's probably not enough. But even those 10 people, if you've been very clear and even met with, you know, partners or people you know in the industry, and it's very clear of like here is the next three things to build, and it's all hands on deck, and maybe again, I think I said this last episode in the early days. If you've got a team of four and you've got a sole product manager, I don't think that's right. It's like an orchestra for a band of one. It's like probably not right just yet. And usually the best product managers in the early days are a developer who can like wear two hats. So I would say in that case, if they're say a developer and they're more hands-on and they're like, I don't have time, like I need to get these bugs done because one customer's losing their mind and risk it churning. And then we have to get this new release done by this weekend or else, you know, this other guy won't sign. But I would say like if Jordan's expecting this product manager to go find leads and talk to people, then yeah, absolutely. You're absolutely correct. I would push back if I was you as well. But joining in a 20-minute or an hour call, half an hour call a week or a fortnight, it's not much. Like there's enough internal meetings that waste our time, let alone like the ability to just listen to a customer or even just pick their brain around. I'll say certain things because every time I've done it and I've been that sales or marketing person or product person and I've walked into the meeting with a developer or a technical person, they always walk away being like, that was awesome. Like, oh, I didn't think about that point that they said. And then they sort of resonate on the back of their mind a lot.
Yep.
And there's afraid of doing confirmation bias. So I think the times they would be right would be if you've got a heap of data and you've just got so much going on that even the quantitative stuff's enough to analyze for now.
Qualitative, you mean?
Sorry. The like quantitative, like if there was like 10,000 users or something like that. Okay. Yeah. And there was there. Again, I'd still say, I don't think there is ever a point where, I don't know, this sounds bad, but I don't think a product manager is ever above talking to a customer.
Interesting.
When I would say that's not warranted is having the salesperson obviously has to do it by their very nature, but the marketing person and Jordan as well. If anything, I'd ask Jordan to come to these meetings as well because typically the founder's got their hypothesis idea of what's going to work. And if they stay so far detached all the time, you have that confirmation bias of like, no, this is what they want. This is what it's like, well, no, it's not what they want. You've just had like three or four conversations and cemented that in your head. If the PM doesn't want to go there, then bring someone else in there because what tends to happen is that people get busy, like myself included, and the only one talking to the market is the sales guy or sales girl. And then that's a riddle of issues because if the PM trusts the salesperson, so I think that's a good thing. If the PM trusts the salesperson enough and goes, I know your judgment, you know our product, you're of sound mind, you've got really good interpretation of their needs, can you just flick me a Slack message once a week to say what they've said? Maybe, hopefully that works. But again, humans are humans, right? And it's this whole like communication will change and there'll be stuff that the salesperson won't hear in a meeting that's like incredibly important. So yeah, I think that's good having the salesperson there, but where they can bring them in. And again, I feel you got to treat it almost like saving money or exercise, right? No one really wants to do it, but you've got to force yourself to go like half an hour a day or two, three times a week or whatever it is. Like you force yourself to do it. So
I am one of the weird people who love it.
Right. Good.
I love customer conversations.
Yep.
And I always drive that in the companies that I help.
Yep. So I'm exactly the same. And
yeah.
I think also too, because I think you and I are very similar in that sense of like, you get that whole echo chamber and it's like egos bashing each other to say what they think is right. But I love coming to a meeting. Not always. No, oh, no, that's not right. Well, actually, I spoke with Janet at so-and-so company and she said the biggest priority for her this year is this. And you're like, oh, crap. Okay. Well, you can't argue with the market.
Yeah.
That's what I love.
Yeah.
Like everyone has their opinions, should and shouldn't be done. At the end of the day, your opinions don't mean anything. It's whatever the market is saying and your interpretation of their needs is all that matters. So yeah, I agree too. I like being on the front line, even as a product marketer or as a salesperson, really, it doesn't matter what position I've been in. I think particularly starting at a company, I love doing the first at least 3 a week if I can.
Yep.
For the first couple of weeks, and just hearing what they have to say and picking them apart and being like, you know, what would make you leave this company, or what do you hate about us, or what does our competitors do better than us that you really want, or like, don't be afraid to be really critical in hearing it.
Yeah,
because I'd rather hear that feedback than 2 months down the track they're like, hey, can we cancel our subscription? And they're like, what? How'd this happen? So, yeah, I like hearing that. I like people who like talking to customers.
Yeah. I've got a question coming to my mind as we're speaking through that around the structure of the team. So you have a product manager here, you have a CEO, you have a marketer and a salesperson. Does having a marketer and a salesperson in a company this size maybe lend itself to having a product manager that is less likely to think they need to talk to customers?
That's a good point. So you're saying if the salesperson and the marketing person, it's like, well, we've already got two customer, you know,
exactly,
two market oriented people.
Yes.
Like, why should we? Yeah, fair. I appreciate why the product manager, as you said, the product manager is like, hey, we've already got two people here. Like, why do you need me? This is my position description. I'm focusing on this. Why do I have to go over here? Yeah, I hear what they're saying again. And again, if the marketing person's having three conversations a week, Jordan's having a couple, and the salesperson is, then yeah, potentially. If that PM, if they're satisfied with that, and they say each week, if that information is getting back to that person.
Yeah.
And Jordan's happy with it, and with each, I guess, new release or new piece of the product that's built, customers are getting happier and happier. Yeah, keep doing what's working. Absolutely. So I think to answer that, I can see what they're saying. If it's working, then keep doing it. But if their new releases are dragging out more and more and they're getting very little adoption, and which is common, but then I would say, like, you should probably get more involved. Like, with the new release, I would like, I was Jordan, with each new release or each new change, I'd want the PM in the meeting with the salesperson or the marketing person and asking them to go, like, why didn't you like it? What did I miss, you know?
So you would structure the team like this as it is then?
I would if the PM was a developer. If the PM wasn't a developer and they were just a straight PM, probably not. I think some of the best developers in the world and engineers in the world don't have like a design mind. It's probably two sides of the brain that are quite different, and vice versa. You know, I think salespeople, when they talk about developer and technical side of things, that like, yeah, makes you want to just leave. But I think the golden ideal scenario is the developer who has an idea of sprints and product management, and usually if someone who's got some experience under their belt can do that quite well. They can scope problems and listen in and do that. But if you hire a very, 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 very technical developer or like engineer, then yeah, you'd have to have a product manager. Again, I would even push back and say Jordan should be the product manager in this case. Like, for a team of four with no paying customers, I think a product manager would add value. But is it critical? Probably not.
Yeah, okay.
If I'm going to spend a good product manager, you're looking at 100 to 150K a year.
Yep.
If I'm going to spend that sort of money, I need the return on that.
Yep.
And particularly if Jordan has this idea and he's an ex-lawyer or an accountant that thought up this idea, he should have an understanding of what the needs look like and what the development should sort of see. I would be questioning the PM. I'd be questioning, you know, how much value are they adding, and is the developer able to do this on their own?
Yep.
If not, then yeah, do what works, right? But the ideal scenario would be a PM who is a developer, who actively works on the product.
Got it. And because I can hear someone listening to this and going,
rolling their eyes, definitely.
Well, not rolling their eyes. No, that's what I wasn't going to say. But were you saying to have people talk to the customers? Jordan probably has to talk to the customers as well. So theoretically, you can have a product manager, Jordan, the CEO, you can have a salesperson, and you can have the marketer in a conversation with a customer. You can see how the optics of that is dragging all these people into one conversation all the time. I think, personally, my view is that's great. Do that. But I understand the optics might look a bit like, well, we don't have the marketer.
Yeah, probably not for every single one. Yeah, I definitely agree with that. I think you might even scare some people who have just like filled out a contact form and six people rock up to their meeting. Is quite terrifying. So yeah, I agree with that. I think it's more of salesperson every meeting. And then if it's like I said, like existing customer, is the PM the CS person as well? And then in which case, yeah, I think having at least two is good. Two to three is probably enough. But the ability of having just bringing more people in, I think just avoiding just that one salesperson in every single interaction. Because same with like, I've worked with marketing people who go, no, I don't want to talk to the customer. Like, that's not my job.
Okay.
Like, well, your marketing, right?
Yes.
You need to engage with the market.
Notice the market in marketing,
yeah. It's in the name.
Okay, so one other thing then. I'm going to be product manager for a second, and I'm going to say to you, well, record the Zoom calls you're having with these people, and I'll go watch it later.
Cool. I'll be very interested if they actually watch those Zoom calls.
That is the thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
That is the thing, yeah.
Or they fast forward and skip to the end and those other ones. Which, again, there's some pretty cool platforms out there now that, like, summarize those points. Yeah, okay, you can get a transcript and summarize it in 14 sentences. Is that going to give you a good interpretation of that customer? Probably not. Mm-hmm. Again, right, if your sales team's having 14 calls a week, yeah, of course, definitely. Don't, the PM, that's wasted. No need to bring them into all those. If anything, as you go down, and maybe this is answering two of those questions, as you go down, if you're getting 15 calls a week, I would bring this PM person in for more of the qualified interactions. So if it's just a random person who's called in to ask a couple of questions, probably not worth their time. Mm. If it's someone who you've met with, you've done a discovery call, they're the right person, right company, they're serious about buying, they've got the problem that is very clear, you absolutely bring them in. Like, those are the calls you need them in there for. So, but as you said, in the beginning, beggars can't be choosers. Like, you need any conversation will do. I'll take any data I can get.
Yeah, for sure. I always record my Zoom calls for the record wherever possible. Mm. I do find it's always good to go back on it. And when you were talking about looking to customers as evidence, you can refer 10 minutes to 13 minutes 20 in this Zoom call. Go watch that. Mm. That's what I mean. I've actually used that quite a few times in my career.
Yes.
Yeah. I'll record the call, know the things that talked about in it, where they talked about. Go listen to these 4 minutes of the call and you'll see exactly what I mean.
That's perfect. Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's, as you said, if it's heaps of calls and it's getting quite a complex process, then absolutely. If you can get a salesperson who can consistently do that, they're a good salesperson. Mm. Like, that's a good way to go, hey, I thought of this really interesting point. They said, between 4 minutes 28 and 6 minutes 32, please watch this part. Like, that's golden.
Yeah.
Again, in the early days, you're then still relying on that salesperson to know what that PM wants to hear. But I completely agree. I think having that data, and even if you don't use half of them, or let's just say the PM doesn't watch it, just collect it. And I agree. If you can collect all that, and even over time, you got a new hire that comes on board and you can go watch it all, or maybe you do an offsite for the year and get the team together to watch some of the highlight. I don't think it's ever a bad idea having data on hand.
Mm.
Mm. So I definitely agree. If you can record your Zoom calls and their customers are comfortable with that.
Yep. In my experience, often they are.
Mm.
Yeah, so long as you say you're not going to broadcast it publicly, it's usually, in my experience, fine.
Yeah. There was actually, I heard a podcast a while ago and it was with, and the name's going to escape me, but it was, they were saying in the beginning when there was only a few meetings, they'd say, oh, do you mind if we record this call? And they said 80% of the time, they were pretty happy to say, yeah, sure, go ahead. But occasionally they go, oh, I'd rather if you don't, you know. So, and then they said after a while, they just got confident in their product. They got confident in what they did. And they changed the phrase to, hey, just so you know, we record every conversation.
Yeah, okay.
And she's like, we've never had a pushback ever.
Wow.
When it's like,
okay, that's good.
Yeah. Like, the certainty of sale is like a book that is quite good when they talk about that of, I mean, you don't want to be pushy, but just go like, this is what's going to happen. And typically people go, okay, yeah, sure, go ahead. Like, that was kind of interesting.
Oh, so, nice.
Yeah.
It's a nice little tip. So if we stick on the topic of product, the marketer, Bailey wants to hire a product positioning consultant, and the CEO, Jordan's resistant to this and says that, well, we've got our value prop right.
Mm.
We improve outcomes by 10x and streamline consultancies, and that's perfect. That's exactly what we do. What would you say to that?
I would say that's probably another podcast episode altogether. So might leave it there. Let's dive into that next week.
Okay, so let's talk about the product marketing and the product positioning in episode 6. Thanks for being here, Alex.
No worries. Thanks, mate.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Push Podcast. Please remember to subscribe, and if you are enjoying the episodes, please leave a review of the podcast on your platform of choice. It really helps to build the podcast credibility and to help others find this type of information.